From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. More roadblocks on the path to peace in Syria. For more detail, we spoke with Mark Sloboda, senior lecturer in international affairs at Moscow State University, via Skype from Moscow, Wednesday.
A lot of people have been ignoring the situation in Syria, partly because there aren't many journalists, certainly not any Western journalists, on the ground. Haven't been in a long time, because most of the areas where the quote rebels are Al Qaeda, and it's far too dangerous for them. This has been continuing.
Lizzie Phelan's been there though, and Murad Ghazdiev, and some others that Bealey and others.
Yep. Yes, on the Syrian government side, Russian reporters have been very active.
So, and Vanessa Bealey, some others from our side too. Yeah, that's right.
So. Right now, there is an extremely murky, tense, and dangerous situation going on in Syria that is not receiving enough attention. Mm. I think on your show, I've been warning that of this culmination that is inevitable for some time, and it is upon us now.
Yeah.
There is a Mexican standoff, as you were, going on now. Between the Syrian government and Russia, and there's not many of them there, but the Iranian or Iranian-backed militia allies on one side. On the other side is the United States and their proxies, which consist of the so-called the branded Syrian Democratic Forces, which is mostly Kurds, formerly of the PKK, and a small number of Arab tribes, and now we have the word that it also, this is coming right from the U.S. government, hundreds of rehabilitated, quote-unquote, ISIS fighters.
Yes. You know, we've been seeing that happen because there were people that went from al-Nusra to something else, to al-Qaeda, to ISIS, and now I guess they're new uniforms again. Okay.
Musical chairs, musical jihadi uniforms. Mm-hmm. I said this isn't a conspiracy theory or rumors. This is the U.S. government openly admitting we have, hundreds of rehabilitated ISIS fighters now part of our border forces in northeast Syria.
Right.
The U.S. has made clear now that they are not leaving Syria, that their goal is partition. They have said they continue the mantra about ISIS. Of course, their goal there is to beat ISIS. ISIS is essentially defeated in the area. But now they've been talking stability in the peace process. And now they're outright saying that they're there to combat Iranian influence in Syria, which, of course, is certainly has no legal mandate. Is a fool's errand in a country close to Iran that wants to ally with Iran, the official government there, and it would keep the U.S. involved in military conflict in the Middle East for the foreseeable future again.
And therein lies the point, really, right?
Yes, and this is on top of that the U.S. installed government in Baghdad is also close to Iran because it's a majority Shia country. And so this creates this arc of Shia influence that the U.S. and neocons and Israel and other countries, Saudi Arabia in particular, are so terrified about. Everything they've done has only increased the relationship, the strength between these countries, between Iran, between Iraq, between Syria, and Hezbollah in Lebanon.
It's amazing. It's almost by design. It's like it's incredible how stupid these people are.
It is the blowback on top of blowback on top of blowback, and everything they do only furthers what they were trying to prevent in the first place. And the third party in this Mexican standoff is Turkey under the Islamist Erdogan regime. They, of course, are officially still a member of NATO, but no one, I don't know how serious anyone takes that anymore. And their proxies consist, on the one hand, of their so-called branded New Syrian Army, which is essentially portions of the formerly U.S.-backed Free Syrian Army. The majority of it is the Al-Qaeda splinter group, the jihadist Ahrar al-Sham, Jaish al-Islam, another radical jihadist group, and others that they've branded and put into uniforms. And these are largely stationed in the this triangle, this protectorate that Turkey has invaded and carved out of north central Syria above Aleppo. It's a triangle between Jarablus, al-Bab, and Azaz. And this splits the Kurdish-controlled territory in Syria in two, right on the Turkish border. And importantly, this Jarablus corridor is geographically very important. It's where invading forces from Turkey have always come into Syria, and theoretically vice versa, because there's mountainous, hilly terrain in Idlib to the west, and also to the east in the more Kurdish-dominated territory. This is always, throughout the conflict, been the most vital corridor for Turkey to get supplies into its Islamist and jihadi proxies in Syria. Turkey and, of course, Qatar and Saudi Arabia and the U.S. at one point, and well, for most of the conflict and so on. So this Jarablus corridor has renewed importance most recently. Their other proxies in this are Al-Qaeda, which are firmly in control of Idlib. On most of the maps you'll see in the New York Times and otherwhere, you'll just see Idlib listed as rebel or opposition territory. Idlib is Al-Qaeda. It is HTS. It is Hayat Tahrir al-Sham. They are now fully under Al-Qaeda's control, the entire province. If you read in, even all of the U.S. regional experts, you know, will admit this, however grudgingly. They'll simply say, well, then we shouldn't attack Al-Qaeda, but despite the two U.N. Security Council resolutions demanding it. This is, again, Turkey is openly cooperating with Al-Qaeda in Idlib. And this is reported openly in AP and Reuters and elsewhere. It was part of the deal. We have this framework that was agreed to between Russia, the Syrian government, Iran as kind of a silent partner, and Turkey, the Astana.
Right.
Yeah, and this is collapsing. You know, this is, it was always doomed to fail eventually, but it's going sooner rather than later.
Right, this basically is Astana as opposed to Riyadh as opposed to Geneva. There were three
as
different.
As opposed to Geneva. Yes. Now, the whole reason why Russia and the Syrian government supported Astana, it's not because Turkey is allied with Russia. Let's get that out of the way.
Yeah, right. Okay.
The Syrian government. It is because Turkey represents the enemy. Turkey is bringing to the table Ahrar al-Sham, Al-Qaeda, you know, all the various sundry jihadi and Islamist groups, you know, that comprise the rebels in Syria.
Right.
The 31 flavors of jihad.
Right.
That is why they are there. Why Russia agreed to deal with Turkey on this. Turkey feels estranged from the U.S., from the U.S.'s, you know, ever-increasing cooperation with the Kurds. They were disappointed at Obama because he didn't go for overt regime change in Damascus. This effort was probably forestalled back in 2015 when Russia first intervened in the conflict. It looked like the U.S. and Turkey were about to start a slow motion Libya-style no-fly zone in Syria that would progress eventually to overt regime change bombing, right, and overt regime change in Damascus, but the Russian intervention forestalled that. There's also how real it is, I don't know. I certainly don't believe that this is the case. It's the only time I think you'll hear me tell me that a coup did not have U.S. involvement, right, but the Turks at least publicly say and may believe that the U.S. was involved in a coup a couple years ago to overthrow the Turkish government that failed spectacularly, and that Erdogan has since seized complete dictatorial powers in the country and allowed him to purge the army, purge everything. Everything. There's hundreds of journalists, teachers, you name it. They're in prison. He's been allowed to purge the Turkish parliament, including of all the Kurdish politicians, but anyone else who's opposed him as well. He used that. It's a quite a convenient excuse for, right, him. He blamed it on the CIA. He blamed it on Gulen, a minority Islamist group whose leader is in the U.S. in Pennsylvania, actually. I very much doubt he had the type of influence to organize this. To me, it looked more likely like like all the other military coups have previously been in Turkey, a failed Kemalist military coup that the Turkish government knew about and sprang early, basically forcing them to act in such an action, and then deliberately used it to further seize control of the country, use that shock moment. And that's the third. And Erdogan is, as much as Russia hoped to play Erdogan with the Astana agreement to cut Saudi Arabia and Qatar and the U.S. out of the deal and just deal with Erdogan, whom they thought was manipulable, right, someone who could be manipulated, someone whose ego is fragile, someone who can be played to. Well, at the same time, the Turks, of course, are not stupid, and they've been playing Russia all along. It seems that Erdogan does have neo-Ottoman aspirations, and he wants to carve a protectorate, at least out of Syria, probably out of a chunk of Iraq as well. And he's certainly not ready to give up. And to be fair, the Kurds are whether you want to call them insurgents or terrorists in Turkey, they're obviously connected with the same movement in Syria just across the border. And, they are, from what the Turkish perspective, at least Erdogan regime, a national security threat. And so he that is what he is justifying his action on. In fact, in recent hours, he has called the U.S. openly announced plans to form a new 30,000 strong border force, as they call it, a proxy force to control northeast Syria. Erdogan has called this a terrorist army. And say it will be defeated, it will be drowned in blood, and so on. And he has actually called on NATO to back him against the U.S. In this. I don't think he'll get very far with that. But it's a very tense situation. Now, this all takes place because ISIS was the low-hanging fruit. ISIS was the one group that expanded in the power vacuum in eastern Syria and western Iraq, also occurred as all of these countries were shoveling large quantities of jihadists and arms into the country, a portion of which went to ISIS. The U.S. knew it was inevitable. The U.S. and its coalition did fight ISIS in certain times and places. They pruned it, they managed it. John Kerry and Barack Obama were both quite open at various points when they said that they allowed ISIS to expand when it was up against Syrian government territory. They hoped to use it as a battering ram when it was up against their proxies, after a certain point, the Iraqi government, they did indeed fight it. But at other places, they let it go. But it never had quite the military capability as people believed. And, you know, even Saudi Arabia and Qatar couldn't openly support it, although they provided it behind the scenes, according to Hillary Clinton and U.S. intelligence. Well, we've got that through WikiLeaks, leaked Clinton emails. Probably the most important thing out of those emails, which has been almost completely ignored by the Western press because of the questions it raises. You know, everyone, at least rhetorically, agreed that ISIS was the bad guy. They've essentially now been defeated. You know, they've got very little territory left, fringe desert areas. So now that the low-hanging fruit is gone, now comes the crux of the matter. We've got this three-way standoff, essentially, between the U.S., Turkey, and Russia and the Syrian government there. And once the U.S. has announced the creation of this 30,000-strong, essentially, you know, Kurdish majority force, and that they're not leaving, you know, Erdogan now feels compelled to act. And he's looking to act in two directions to either side of the territory that Turkey controls in Syria. To the west is a Kurdish canton. It's referred to as the Afrin Canton. But, you know, it's close to the Turkish border, to the west of this Drablus and Aleppo area. Very quietly, these Kurds in Afrin have actually been supported by Russia. It shouldn't be. We've talked about it before. The Kurds in Syria are not a monolith. The Kurds in Afrin have always been supported by Russia and the Syrian government. They are supplied by them. They've received close air support from them. And there are currently, according to the BBC and other sources, about 300 Russian troops in Afrin that are there, you know, they have been there to make sure that, you know, that Erdogan didn't attack.
Right.
The other area is to the east, and this is just to the west, on the west side of the Euphrates River. This is the city of Manbij, which Erdogan has threatened before. It was taken by U.S.-backed Kurdish forces. It's been shelled by the Turks multiple, and you know they're Islamist proxies multiple times already, and he's threatening to move there as well. This would expand his territory controlled in Syria, and it would eliminate two urban areas that are controlled by the Kurds. Now, the problem with this situation, from the U.S. perspective, they've obviously hitched their horses to the Kurds, no matter, and it's not clear what they think they will get out of this. If they think they're going to get leverage in a final settlement, a peace settlement looks very far apart right now. If they think they're going to use this to combat Iranian influence in the region, again, they're only working to create more Iranian influence.
Right.
They are alienating their two closest allies in the region, Turkey, who is a member of NATO and has vital U.S. military bases for the U.S. Military operations and control of the region, and also Turkey controls access to the Black Sea, which the U.S. wants to, you know, keep access to. They've threatened Russia that they will continually keep a U.S. naval presence now in the Black Sea, so they certainly don't want to be cut out of there either.
Right.
The other is, of course, the Iraqi government that was installed by the United States and you know, George W. Bush and so on, but has shown increasing independence and good relations with Iran and with Syria. And they're not happy. They don't want an independent Kurds carved out of Syria, you know, having a knock-on effect in Iraq, just like the Turks don't want. You know, the Kurds, again, being the largest ethnic group in the world that has no nation state of its own. So by doing this, the U.S. is effectively alienating their two closest allies in the region, and as far as I can see, destroying their own foreign policy north of the Gulf in the process. But they seem compelled to do this, basically to stick it to the Syrian government and Russia, for having failed, you know, being prevented at regime changing Damascus. They just seem to want to be a spoiler at this point, no matter damn the consequences.
Because there's other things too, you know, Turkey, for example, has been involved between Azerbaijan and Armenia. You know, there's all these regional, you know, intrigues, I guess. Yes. Some call this one a frozen conflict, for example, that are in play.
It goes far. Turkey has military bases in Somalia and Djibouti now.
Yeah.
The Greeks just intercepted another shipment of Turkish weapons going to Libya. The ongoing conflict there. Turkey has their fingers in a lot of pies, and you know they are not a great power, but they are a regional power and an increasingly important and powerful one, and their geostrategic importance is not at all to be underestimated. Yep. Russia would very much like at this point to see the Kurds backed by the U.S. and Turkey just go at it. Right, those are their two remaining obstacles to, you know, recovering all of Syrian territory for Syria, for the Syrian government. But Turkey is looking at both of these areas. But it seems at the moment that they've moved the majority of their troops and seem to be most active towards Afrin, which is an area, of Kurds, again, that is essentially protected by Russia. The U.S. spokesman for the anti-Daesh operation, the Pentagon spokesman, made clear that the Kurds in Afrin, the U.S. has nothing to do with. They receive no supplies. They have nothing to do with them. That, you know, they're not a part of that at all. Russia would be very happy if Turkey went after the Kurds, the U.S.-backed Kurds in Manbij first. Right, that would further split Turkey and the United States, possibly ejecting Turkey out of NATO. And then Russia could eventually deal with whoever the victor out of that scrap would be. You know, whether both are exhausted or what actually happens. That would be wonderful from Russia's perspective. But Erdogan actually seems to be going for Afrin first, and here Russia is faced with a dilemma. Because they would have to evacuate their troops and essentially probably also allow Turkey to use air force in Syria in order for Turkey to complete any type of serious military action against Manbij. Right. There are advantages for Russia for this. It is from a cold realist perspective. Give Turkey Afrin if they want it so badly. Temporarily, at least for the time being, then let Erdogan go at the U.S. backed Kurds and probably the U.S. as well to the east, and that would help rupture Turkey out of NATO, then again they could deal with whoever is the victor out of that struggle in Syria.
Right.
But that would mean is Russia would be abandoning someone who has the Kurds, who have, you know, in Afrin, who have been effectively loyal to the Syrian government and have been Russian allies throughout, you know, this conflict so far. And they would be throwing the Kurds under these Kurds, at least, under the bus, just like the U.S. has thrown the Kurds in Iraq under the bus so many times before.
Well, it kind of redeems the U.S. doing it, not just in terms of the symbology, but also in terms of the inter alia battles among the Kurds. Suddenly, the cost of the U.S. throwing their Kurds under the bus before goes down because now these are being thrown under the bus.
Yeah. It has to be said that part of the reason why this has come about is that as soon as Donald Trump won the election, quite openly, the neocon think tanks, Brookings and others, immediately, openly started to discuss, right? They're not hiding this from anyone, that they needed to shift their arguments away from Russia, which Trump seemed to have, you know, some desire to improve relations with, and frame everything in Syria as against Iranian influence. And this is what they have done. And they have done it very effectively. And whether it's, you know, the cabal of generals in the deep state that are fully in charge, or whether they've sold Trump and those among his the few remaining among his circle who were always hot against Iran. They've bought into this.
Yeah, and you know, we've been discussing for at least a year that it's actually a fantasy because Russia and Iran not only have been working very closely together in Syria, but they've been building their ties to like a strategic partnership, similar to what's been going on with China.
There's just announcements that Russia is going to build Iran pipelines from Iran to India, right, so that Iran can supply gas to India.
Okay.
You know, as part of a three-way deal and so on. Yeah. So the Russian-Iranian partnership is only getting stronger throughout all of this. Another consequence of the U.S. Attempted regime change in Syria that is blown back on them. The Pentagon has always preferred working with the Kurds in Syria. The military is quite tired of these games of the U.S. of arming Wahhabis, of arming jihadists that have inevitably always turned and then suicide bombed the guys training them and so on. So the military was actually vice the CIA, which has always been backing these jihadis in Syria. The Pentagon was quite happy to drop all the jihadists and concentrate on the Kurds, which they see as rational. They're secular. They're not consumed with this Sunni Shia divide. There's a little bit of Marxist dogma, but they think they can get around that with the supply of weapons and arms, and so on that is enabling them. And it's sad to say, but revolution in the 21st century is no longer what it was in the 20th century. It's no longer about class differences and everything. Once again, like it was in the 19th century, revolution is about nationalism or ethnic religious divides.
Back to the future.
And this time, they can relate to a Kurdish desire for their own nation state. And lots of people, agree with that. Now, the whole Wilsonian arguments. Now,
For nothing. I mean, Lenin pointed out the necessity of dealing with the nationalities question correctly, and that was well known among the people that were constructing the Soviet Union, and they never got resolved anywhere else. You have all these nationalities that were intentionally divided by nation states, by the colonial powers. That's not fixed yet.
Yeah, but the world wasn't ever divided up into nation states.
Right.
There never were
discrete
nations. There were always multi-ethnic empires, kingdoms, and so forth.
Mobs.
This European ideology of nationalism, idea that one ethnicity and one state, the borders should be congruous, and that leads to unity and facilitating
cohesion, democracy, unity
within the country. That took hundreds of years of genocidal, fratricidal warfare, everything from the Hundred Years' War, the 80-Year War, the Wars of Spanish Succession, all the way up through
What do you get at the end of it, other than setting up for another battle, basically, against the guy next door? It's like insane.
Or then you just, it's funny, as much as the EU, for instance, supports new nationalism and the creation of nation states in Eastern Europe and elsewhere, they're also dismantling them in the EU. The EU itself is a nation dismantling regime, and they flood their countries with policies of multiculturalism, with cheap labor immigrants,
and they argue for the necessity of a South Sudan, for example, and separate and distinct
East Timor. So, I mean, I'm not a big fan of the ideology of ethnic nationalism, but I think a lot of leftists from the whole legacy of the Cold War have a certain feeling of affinity or sympathy, at least, with the Kurds.
But again, we got about 30 seconds now, so we got to kind of wrap it up.
The Kurds are not a monolith anywhere. So anyway, keep your eyes on this conflict because it could go anywhere at this point. Erdogan is a wild card. Is he going to act against the U.S.? Is he going to act against the Syrian government in Russia by going after this Afrin canton? Will Russia make the geopolitical cold decision and sacrifice Afrin and the Kurds there in order to placate Erdogan and hope that he then goes against the U.S. in eastern Syria. It's a very tense situation. There's so many world order questions, the future of NATO, the future of the region.
Maybe the future of humanity. So stay tuned, everybody.
It's a big bomb waiting to explode.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.